Oh, I guess y'all don't know. Look, the only problem this stallion has is keeping the names with the faces, you know what I'm saying? You can call and tell him about the time. Tell him about the time.
Not that it's anybody's business, but my first time will be a loving expression of my commitment to the girl of my dreams.
That's beautiful, Carl. I call. Check it out. Three kings and a virgin!
I just wanted to let you know about my study group.
Oh, don't be a fuddy-duddy. I'll be your study buddy.
I'm about to embark on one of the great challenges of my scientific career.
This work right here is going to change history.
I think this is going to be our greatest mission.
I don't have time to study. I'll never get into Stanford.
I got big plans for you tonight. I got maps. I got charts. I got to see you through this because my credibility is on the line.
It's at this point that you'll want to start taking notes.
Welcome to The Sitcom Study, the podcast where we contemplate the TV shows we grew up with and search for the truth and wisdom within the tropes and cliches. And I will make the joke for the second and final time. To paraphrase Ross Geller, we are on a break. We are taking a small hiatus from making new episodes, so instead we're making mixtapes.
That's right.
So what are we mixing up today?
Today, we are doing the remix of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. We're going to re-listen and re-watch our episode one, Losing Our Virginity, but it's Fresh Prince, season four, episode five, It's Better to Have Loved and Lost. We're also going to revisit our Halloween seances episode and season four, episode seven, Hex and the Single Guy. And finally, our early 90s hip hop guest stars episode, season two, episode 11, The Butler Did It of the Fresh Prince.
Yep. Just in case you weren't here last week or you don't know what we're talking about, our normal MO is to track a sitcom trope over four disparate episodes of different sitcoms over the years. But
disparate, nice.
Yeah, what we mean by a mixtape is just we're taking all of the times over our various podcasts that we've covered a given show and stringing those together in a fun little montage, if you were. But before we get to our old segments, we're doing a quiz.
That's right.
We don't have a which personality type are you this time. This is just a straight up knowledge quiz. Mm-hmm. So
we need to see how well, because Jay has shown us over the first season, many episodes, that he is quite a fan of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. But now we're going to find out how true of a fan he is with this BuzzFeed quiz.
If the question is, did my best friend and I model our own handshake after the way Will and Jazz slapped their hands together and did the little psh thing?
I'm going to need to see this.
The answer is yes. All right, lay it on me.
All right, we're starting off with an easy one. Where is Will from originally?
I believe he was born and raised in West Philadelphia.
This just says Philadelphia. Very easy on this one. Yes. It's Philadelphia,
less
duh.
Less specific than the theme song.
All right. How old is Will when he moves to Bel-Air?
Ooh, okay.
That's a good one.
Yeah, well, I feel like they pretty much avoided the sitcom thing of staying in high school for 8 years or
right.
whatever.
They Didn't had a handful. They do, I think they did like an extra year.
Yeah, they probably weren't super realistic, but they did a handful of years in high school and then they did move on to college. I'm going to guess that he was portraying a high school sophomore and that he was meant to be 16.
All right. The choices are 15, 16, 17, 18. Going with 16. Oh, he was 17 years old.
All right, yeah.
Who is Carlton's guardian angel?
Is it Tom Jones?
Would you like the choices?
Yeah,
Tom Jones is one of them.
Tom Jones is, yeah. I wouldn't think of him as, well, actually, I think Tom Jones appeared many times in the show. It was the thing where they would always make jokes about Carlton worships Tom Jones because he has cheesy taste. And then when the show got big enough and popular enough, they started having him on. And so I bet there is a little dream sequence or something where he's literally
where
his guardian angel.
No answers needed. He gets it correct. They're doing the Carlton happy dance.
Nice. All right. Give me one more and then we'll move on to our first segment.
What is Ashley Banks's secret talent?
Ooh, well, I mean, She does play the drums in the very first episode. All right, give me the choices.
Choices: dancing, rapping, swimming, singing.
I feel like they would give her stories like that throughout all the episodes. They would give her, she's a dilettante. She was always trying different things. What are the choices again?
Dancing, rapping, swimming, and singing.
All right, so none of them are tennis, because I'm pretty sure she played
she
tennis.
She played a lot of tennis. No, I remember
I'm
going to
say singing.
Okay, let's go with singing. And you're correct, it's singing.
Yeah, there's an episode where we need to add that, if it's not already there, to our 15 minutes of fame trope.
Oh.
Because there's one where they make her like a recording artist. Yeah.
Interesting.
All right, let's leave it there. We'll return to this in a little while. But first, we're going to go back in time to our very first podcast episode ever, Losing Our Virginity, and the final segment, I believe, of that, because that episode dealt with Head of the Class, it dealt with Full House, and Facts of Life, right? Natalie, DJ, everyone was contemplating losing their virginity. You pointed out that it sort of fell along the gender lines, and
absolutely
the guys
did.
Got to actually sow their wild oats, and
the
ladies,
girls decided
not, so much.
Not to. Well, except for Natalie, right? Natalie did.
That's true. But anyway, so yeah, this is from our very first podcast episode ever. This is the segment on The Fresh Prince.
So we should talk about Fresh Prince.
Yeah.
So Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, season 4, episode 5, It's Better to Have Loved and Lost It, ellipses.
So this is another case of we're joining the show in the later years, because this is already where they're out of the house and they're living in the boathouse or whatever.
And yet another one, right? Now we have yet another episode where there's this wacky B-plot. Of
the wackiest of B-plots,
where the where Philip, whatever, the dad,
Uncle Phil,
he's a judge, and some media or some other candidate or something is, they're trying to dig up dirt on all the judges, and Jeffrey, the butler, keeps freaking out and dropping things when he hears this, because apparently, we don't know at the beginning, he's got some skeletons in his closet.
Yes, and I have to admit, it successfully faked me out, because I thought it was going to be an immigration issue.
Which they do make that joke at the very end. Yeah, they make that joke at the very end.
But the A story is another virginity thing. And
yes.
Can I say off the bat, is the movie The 40-Year-Old Virgin stolen from this episode of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air? Because this episode begins with a poker game in which you got Will, you got Carlton, you got Jazz, right?
Yeah.
DJ Jazzy Jeff has the wacky friend Jazz, and one other friend
who I don't know who he is, and he is harsh. He's like, man, I remember my first time.
They're playing poker. They're trading stories like us boys always do about the first time they ever had sex. And it's just like that scene in 40-Year-Old Virgin where everyone's chiming in. But the one guy has nothing to say. In this case, it's Carlton. But unlike 40-Year-Old Virgin, Carlton comes clean immediately.
Oh,
he's
and
a proud virgin.
Yes, he's proud of it.
Yeah, and he says, I'm waiting. He doesn't say I'm saving myself for marriage.
No.
That concept, this is the opposite of Full House.
Right.
And this, the concept of saving yourself for marriage is not even on the table.
No, because it's guys.
Yeah, it's Carlton saying, I just want it to be special, right?
She's got to be, I've got to be in love with her. She's got to be Miss Wright. It's got to be the woman.
Yeah. The funny thing, though, is Will Smith, when he gets like super silly, he'll do that thing where like for a few seconds, he wants to make it seem like Carlton is like Mr. Ladies Man or something.
Yes.
So he does one of those like, he goes, the only trouble this guy has is putting the names to the faces. You know what
I mean? That's right. That's what it was.
he gets so kind of silly with his gestures and his faces and everything. It's really funny. And so Will's tack is to like, he thinks he's being a good friend to Carlton to be like, I will corroborate the fact that this guy is a freaking, you know, Lothario. But Carlton's like, no, not necessary. Like, I have never had sex and I don't want to until I meet the special woman of my dreams.
And then we cut to a scene like the next day where they're in the student union and he's like, Carlton, don't you know we're grown men now, we're in college, we've got to lie about this stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, which is like, it's a horrible message, but it is funny, again, the way he delivers it. It's just like, at least be a man and lie. But so in the store, Carlton meets, what's her name?
Joanne, yes. Yeah. Her name's Joanne. And no, so Carlton is describing to Will about why it's important that he shouldn't lie and mm-hmm. that he is a proud virgin and he's going to remain one until he meets this woman, and he describes her. And this Joanne person is walking around in the background, and every single thing that Carlton describes, she is the embodiment of it, and Will sees it
The joke is that then when she goes to ask Carlton a question, he's like, can't you see we're talking? Leave us alone.
Right. And he blows her off because he doesn't see any of that, but Will has seen word for word her act out all the qualities in Miss Wright that Carlton wants.
So Carlton starts talking to her, and there's a little bit of a fake out because it's like she says something about Princeton, but then it turns out she doesn't really like Princeton that much. But then she says something about Tom Jones, and that just like they do that 90s thing of the cutting to a music cue or something like Dreamweaver in Wayne's World.
She's perfect.
And so I guess he asks her out.
Yes. And she says yes. I mean, it's very quick. And you kind of get the impression that she's interested. And even though he yelled at her in the first place, she very quickly is like, yeah, let's go. And so, off they go together to go have dinner.
Yeah.
And
what I'm going to say is I think this woman gets the least interiority of anyone, right, in any of these shows. Like, she's kind of a black box in terms of, like, what the hell she's thinking.
In terms of what the hell she's thinking, absolutely. But she is introduced as the perfect woman. Like, as she's making her way around the bookstore, she lights up the room with her smile. And yes, the lights come on. She asks
ways.
For a
It's
super...
in dating profile ways. It's yes. in the thing of, she likes Tom Jones and I like Tom Jones. Yes. You know, it's
she
all...
She likes this book.
Yeah, it's superficial bullshit. And...
But she does get more of an introduction than the easiest girl in school.
Right. But I still feel like by the end of that, we got more of a sense of Rhonda than we ever do of Joanna. But before we even get there, Joanne, what I was going to say to that idea, I think the dynamic becomes very similar to Arvid and Rhonda because Joanne, Carlton is oblivious and dopey and
but he's not as dopey as Arvid.
I would argue more dopey in the sense that when they have their date, I think we don't get to see much of the date. We get to see the sort of like doorstep scene afterwards.
Yes, he's dropping her back off after a nice date.
Right. So unlike Arvid in Head of the Class, who knew I'm going to have sex and I need to decide what to do about that, Carlton, it's one of those sitcom things where for the needs of the scene, he's just a total moron and like does not pick up on anything she's saying.
They're saying goodbye and there's no awkwardness. Like Carlton is being a normal dude saying goodbye. He was like, wow, you know, kind of, I mean, he is sort of, gosh, I really like this date or whatever. And she's smiling and nodding and it wasn't awkward. And then he was like, can I kiss you goodnight? And she says, and you know, it's coming. Like it is absolutely, you know, what's going to come out of her mouth. She's like, tomorrow morning. And that's when he's like, oh, you know, gets the big eyes and gets the whatever. He gets pulled into the bedroom. And this is the only show where they actually have the time of the sex exist in the actual show. And it is a flower with a bee on it.
Oh, my God.
And then another image.
Okay. I know there's a montage.
Yes.
I looked down to write a note. And so I missed several of these images. The one image I definitely made a mental record of is a dog catching a frisbee.
Yes. And then there was some sort of like wave crashing or avalanche happening.
Yes.
He thinks she's Miss Wright and she's been Miss Wright and all is well with the world. He comes home the next morning in the same clothes. He does his Carlton dance, you know, and is all happy. And then they have this sort of weird conversation where they're speaking metaphorically.
That was funny.
Because the younger daughter is in the room.
Ashley is in the room. And so Will is going like, did you close that deal with that business advisor or something? Yeah. It's a very obvious joke that you know is coming, but it's still kind of funny. We're like, they're talking in all these
and
dumb euphemisms.
I protected my assets and all of that. And then
they leave. Hillary walks in and asks Ashley, what was that all about? And she goes, Carlton lost his virginity. So Carlton is sort of like basking in that.
In the afterglow, as yeah, it were.
We start getting that B story you were talking about with Jeffries getting yes. nervous about the, you know, there's a committee investigating all the potential judges. And right. so you got the sense he's got something that he's going to have to confess. But then ultimately everything comes to a head when they go to like an event, right?
There's, yeah, the reception for this guy who works at their school but went to Princeton. And that's Carlton wants to meet this guy because he wants him to put in a good word for him so he can get into Princeton. So now we're at the party. It's like the next night or something. We're at this reception. And Carlton has made his introductions to this guy that has a position of power and basically is like, well, all it takes is one call from me to get you into yes. Princeton.
There's always, you know, if your character is, you know, at the age of wanting to get into college, there's always some grown up that they have to impress that's like going to make a call and get them into. I don't know that. I don't know anybody who got into college that way, you know.
Well, I know some friends that were applying to Ivies. You did have to do an alumni interview, but I don't know how much that was one phone call.
So basically, you find out that this guy, this old alumni guy or whatever that this is all for, Joanne is his wife.
Yeah.
And Carlton is her side piece.
Or her just for now, because they're only in town for this short period of time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't know what to say.
So, yeah. So, Carlton has built that he's so excited. He feels like he's found her. He's been running this high all day long. He's so excited to see her again. And then, have you met my wife? And boom, there she is. And there's this, you know, he has this realization. And so, everything that he had wanted was taken away from him.
And it just, again, this is what I mean by, like, no interiority for Joanne. Just, like, what is she doing?
I mean, they have that little conversation at the, where he asks her that. He's like, what, you know, are we going to run away together now? Like, what are we going to do when, you know, what? And she's like, no, 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 no. That's not at all what this is. This is, you know, I like to have a little fun sometimes. And that's what that was. And, you know.
But it's just so brazen.
Sorry about it.
Why, like, because she's having an affair with, like, some guy that, like, I don't know to what extent she's aware of Carlton's connection to
Yeah. Also, husband. Some child. Like, if she's old enough to be married
well,
and
yeah,
he's
that,
young.
Yeah, that's a whole other thing. Yeah, this guy. Yeah. How old is this guy? Are we just supposed to understand he's, like, a full-on, like, adult,
like, and 40-year-old guy.
Yeah, and we split the difference for her and say she's like 29 or something.
So this, again, though, maybe the reason that it didn't strike us as so odd is that Carlton is actually older, you know?
Definitely.
Right? Alfonso Ribeiro at that time, this is 93.
Like 24 probably, right?
Yeah, this is 93. He was born in 71, so he's, 23. Yeah, 23. So maybe her, I don't know.
You're just sort of left to go like, all right, I guess she sucks. And now Carlton's, you know, dream of losing his virginity to the perfect woman has been shattered.
And that's it.
There was a scene between Will and Carlton that I misremembered because I had a memory of this scene taking place in a church and instead it takes place in a treehouse. And Will says something to the effect of, like, maybe I should have been more careful, more romantical or whatever. Maybe I should have taken it more seriously myself. Like, I kind of admired you for having that sort of idealism. But yeah, I don't know. In the end, it's just like a little bit of a cautionary tale of, like, Carlton was careful, but not careful enough. Like, what are we supposed to take from that?
I don't know. Again, I think it's the same lesson for both of the guys that it shouldn't just be because everybody says you need to lose it that you need to lose it. And so in the one instance, we had Arvid heed the advice and decide to get to know the girl and not have sex. The guys have this, like, these cautionary tales of, like, make sure it matters to you because we know everybody just wants to do it. We know you're horny. make sure it matters. And the girls have a different message. It's the responsible thing is to be with the guy that you know you're going to be with and you're committed to. And that is what you need to make sure that you're choosing responsibly.
Isn't that kind of similar? Isn't that what would make it special?
Yeah, but it comes from different angles, right? So it comes from the, we know you're going to do it. And so make it special for the guys. And it comes from that you shouldn't do it. If you do.
Okay. And it's also like with a guy, it can be special, but momentary. Whereas with the girl, it has to be like, you got to be in it for the whole time.
Yeah. And both of the guys have the peer pressure of the positive peer pressure. This is the best thing ever. And not DJ, because that, you know, whatever, that they don't even talk about sex in that. But Natalie has the peer pressure the other way. Like, you shouldn't have done it. You're going to be judged. This is a bad choice. Are you sure? Are you sure? Are you sure?
Okay, so that was the losing our virginity segment. So hit me with a few more trivia questions.
All right. When Will first arrives at the bank's house, who does he put up a poster of on his bedroom wall?
Malcolm X.
Oh, not even needing the choices, he would later go on to play him, right? Or no, that was Denzel. Totally wrong.
Yeah.
Who did he play? Ali? Who did he play?
Yes, he played Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, because you know, Muhammad X, Malcolm X, I'm a mess.
The first episode. The first episode of The Fresh Prince ends with Uncle Phil and Will Smith have this like intense conversation where, you know, Uncle Phil is like, I have the real like black intellectual bona fides. You have this picture of Malcolm X on the wall, but I heard him speak and I went to the rallies and stuff.
Wow.
So yeah, it's like a plot point.
Nice. All right. Well, no choices needed. He gets it right. And you quoted the meme that pops up. You have a nice poster of Malcolm X. I heard the brother speak.
Yeah.
All right, next question. Which song do Will and Carlton dance to when they enter a talent contest?
Ooh. I need the choices for that.
Pony by Genuine. YMCA by the Village People.
Okay.
Apache, Jump On It by Sugar Hill Gang. And Upside Down by Diana Ross.
The first and third choices I've never heard of.
You absolutely know the Jump On It song.
I don't remember a YMCA bit, but that's entirely possible. I'm going to go with the last one, the
Upside Down by Diana Ross.
Yeah.
Come on. Bang, 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 bang. Kimasabe, Jump On It, Jump On It. And you got to do the dance. Like, it All is right. so iconic, Fresh Prince.
Okay, I remember that bit. That song, I don't think I'm familiar with it as like a real song.
Oh, it's so fun.
All right, give me one more.
All right. And then here we go. What boy band is Nikki Banks named after?
All right. So Nikki was the little kid.
Yeah,
that
the
they
late
introduced.
Season edition, right?
Yes, who grew from, you know, 2 days old to 4 or 5
Can't
years old.
Can't wait to do that podcast when we get to do the ones with the kids that like magically age. We have a long list of those sitcoms.
So what boy band? Okay, I feel like, I mean, I don't even know at that time in the early 90s what a boy band would even really
well
mean.
Think about the name Nikki.
I know. To me, you say boy band early 90s, I think New Kids on the Block.
Yeah, but there wasn't
they
a
didn't
Nikki.
Have a Nikki.
Who did? Would you like the choice?
Yeah, give me the choice.
Boys to Men, NSYNC, Run DMC, or New Edition?
Okay, I've never heard Run DMC referred to as a boy band.
No, me either.
Ronnie, Bobby, Ricky, Mike, Ralph, Johnny, too. We've been through all this. New Edition didn't have a Nikki. And what were the other choices?
Boys to Men, NSYNC, and Run DMC.
See, here's the thing. Like, of all of those, NSYNC is the only one that I even really consider a boy band. To me, that's... They jump right off the page, except I feel like NSYNC, they were like 12 years old at the time.
Yeah, it was
this
way
out.
Later. That was NSYNC's way later.
So I guess I'm going to have to go with Boys to Men because I know them by their nicknames, Slim, Bass, etc. I don't know their real first names, so I'll say Boys to Men.
All right, let's see. And he's got it right. He reasoned his way through it.
Okay, Sherlock Holmes himself could not have done it better. All right, let's save the last...
I can't believe you missed jump on it.
Let's save the last few questions for the end of the podcast, and we're going to travel back in time now to our Halloween podcast, where we were talking about the Halloween episodes through the years. This is the yes. Halloween seances
and
episode.
And you guys can decide for yourselves whether or not this was meant to be a comment on, like, Black Lives Matter before Black Lives Matter, because that episode still, I still think about it. I'm like, was it? Were they telling us something? Were they trying to tell us this?
Yes, there are undertones for sure. So this is from our Halloween podcast. This is the Fresh Prince segment.
This episode is called Hex and the Single Guy.
Yep. We, of course, talked about Fresh Prince of Bel-Air on our very first podcast episode with the Carlton losing his virginity. And the Fresh Prince is the recently crowned winner of our favorite TV theme songs ever countdown.
That's right.
Several episodes back. We love Fresh Prince. We love the theme song. Looking at the thumbnail of this, just choosing it on HBO Max, I remembered this episode. The Carlton in the Macaulay Culkin blonde hair thing and everything.
But he isn't dressed at all like Macaulay Culkin.
We'll get to whether or not it's an accurate and effective Halloween costume. All I'm saying is that I remembered it.
Isn't he dressed like somebody else?
I think he's dressed like Wesley Snipes in Demolition Man.
Yeah.
If you've ever seen that movie, he looks just like that.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, it is a memorable image. I was happy that, you know, it sort of worked out that this was going to be one of our selections. Fresh Prince, Halloween, we're ready to go.
That's right, and a seance as well. So this episode starts, they're in the kitchen having breakfast in the morning. The boys come in. We're later on in the series, so now the boys have graduated from high school, and they are going to that local college and living in the pool house.
Yeah, we also have at this point in the series, Hillary, the older sister, was dating and briefly engaged to a local TV journalist named Trevor, who died because he was proposing to her while bungee jumping and something went wrong.
Something went wrong and he went splat, who, upon research, because I'd completely forgotten this, was played by Brian Stokes Mitchell. Tony Award-winning, very famous Broadway actor, like amazing voice, who during the pandemic was one of these guys that went viral because he lives on the park in, you know, Upper East Side or Upper West Side or something like that. And he would sing with his gorgeous booming, you know, baritone out his window every day when all of us were like banging pots and pans and clapping and whatever. Prior to that, like in the half an hour or so leading up to that, he would just open his window and start singing amazing songs. And so you can find him on YouTube just like, New York, New York, like singing out his window like Evita to the masses of all of us sad New Yorkers when we were stuck inside for months.
Yeah, that's not surprising at all. This guy was clearly cast for his, you know, for his looks, but for his voice especially. He had this whole thing of like, hey, how the hell are you? I'm a TV weatherman or a TV anchorman, and I'm just super charismatic, you know, big, broad-shouldered, handsome guy. But similar to the way Seinfeld handled Susan's death, the show does not take it seriously. And from the jump, his being killed off is very much played as a laugh. And in this case, the whole episode is going to be centered around Hillary wanting to commune with him by way of a psychic that she saw on TV. Because in the 90s, TV psychics were a thing.
Absolutely. Call me now for your free reading.
Yeah, the Psychic Friends Network, that was part of it.
That was Dionne Warwick, and then you had, Miss Cleo, who was always on the late-night infomercials to get you to call in and find out your future. So Hillary has booked this psychic that's going, or this medium or whatever, that is going to allow her to commune with Trevor. And it is Halloween in this episode.
Yes. Yes.
So she is telling the family that morning at breakfast, you know, hey, when I spoke to the, you know, this medium guy on the phone, he said that the best way to contact Trevor is to have more family members there so we can get the psychic energy going. So I need at least four other people. And she's looking around to her family members and they're all not interested in doing it. And the three guys, Uncle Phil, Carlton, and Will, are making jokes about him, you know, going splat or, you know, getting crushed or whatever.
Yeah, this is one of the rare times in the series where Uncle Phil and Will are completely on the same page. And yes, so the whole process throughout the whole episode, arguably even a little out of character, Uncle Phil is constantly snickering with Will at the other characters. And so as much as I think he's being a little bit of a dick to his daughter, it's kind of fun to see James Avery and Will Smith actually kind of be on the same page for once.
Yeah.
So yeah, they all go to this psychic, but because it's Halloween, the teenage characters anyway are dressed in their various costumes.
In their costumes, right. Because Will has a party that he's going to go to and Carlton says, well, you're going to cut into my trick-or-treating time. So the mom, Aunt Viv, makes a point to just lay down the law. She starts, you know, being very upset and she's like, I guess no one cares about Hillary and no one cares that I, as much as I do about our daughter, and this is so sad and she's taken this so hard. And she has like what would be considered more of like a real reaction to all of the callousness that Hillary is being faced with. And then Hillary leaves the room and the guys can say, okay, we'll go. And they go to they go off to tell Hillary that they're going to go to this seance. And Aunt Viv turns to the younger daughter and is like, watch and learn.
Oh, yeah.
Like, she didn't even care either, but she was just like making up that she was sad. Well, so the guys would do what she thought was right.
Yeah, this is a very questionable moment, I thought, because what she does, it's not just a guilt trip. She gets all like sort of hysterical herself. And, you know, it's basically saying, hey, Ashley, you need to learn the art of manipulation, you know, this specifically feminine gendered manipulation where you pretend to cry and get really upset. Yeah, not Aunt Viv's most progressive moment.
No, not at all.
But they all go to this psychic who is played by this great character actor from the 80s. He's Otho in Beetlejuice. He is the priest at the funeral in Heathers. He's in Stephen King's Sleepwalkers, if you remember that one. I don't know the guy's name in real life, but he's this big sort of plump, gay, weird character actor that just shows up in stuff and always has this very interesting presence.
Yes, he's got this immediate energy that comes on the screen. So, like I remember this from watching him in Beetlejuice. It's like he's always judging you and also wants to be adored by you at the same time. Like, he has a great energy. His name is Glenn Shaddix, and he is great. Like, he shows up, and immediately we were like, ah, Beetlejuice! And he leads the seance, and it's another one of these, just like from Wizard of Oz, where it's very clear right away that he doesn't know anything. This is just a ploy for money. Hillary has shared in a previous scene that she shelled out $1,000 for this psychic to have this seance. So, you know, this is a costly moment for the whole family, and also they're, you know, giving up their various exploits on Halloween as well to be there for Hillary.
Yeah. Also, just brief shout out to the flickering lights we get in the seance as the universal sign of something supernatural is going on, but we don't want to spend a lot of money. And then, yeah, we do get a little bit of that, the humor of I'm going to be possessed, right? Because Otho channels Trevor, which is
starts to, yeah, right?
Which is pretty funny. Like, it's a fun idea given everything that you just said about that actor's charisma and his whole personality. Very antithetical to this little Otho butterball guy. So it is funny when he sort of puts on that voice and everything.
Yes. So he, like, then he does his best impression of Brian Stokes Mitchell and he's like, hey, baby, which is great. And then he loses contact with him because Will makes a joke and Uncle Phil snickers. And that was the moment that I too noticed, like, oh, you know what? That's kind of out of character. I wonder why he's snickering. But anyway, so they lose contact with him and Otho is mad and Hillary is upset. She's like, you ruined my one chance to have closure and say goodbye. You're so mean. And then Otho is like, you know, you're the problem, and puts a hex on Will.
Well, because Will really lays into him. Like, he goes from making fun of him to actually calling him out, like, kind of seriously. Like, the psychic is like, oh, well, you're making a mess of this or whatever. This isn't working because of you. And Will starts to really kind of be like, all right, enough is enough. Like, you're a scammer. Like, we're not buying this or whatever. And so the guy's like, screw you, you're cursed. And we're going to get the premise for the second half of the episode, which is,
and it wasn't just like, screw you, you're cursed. It was like speaking in tongues, alahamahenehenu, and like does it twice through and is like, I put a curse on you.
Yeah. So the second half of the episode is going to be the various family members having problems because of this curse that's been, you know, laid upon their house, but they are way out of proportion for each other.
Yes.
Right?
The psychic tells Will that that evil will befall everyone you care about. And that is the curse that he has given him.
Yeah.
So that's what happens.
So Uncle Phil gets a call saying that basically his entire career and reputation is in shambles. It's like he's been accused of taking bribes or attempting to bribe a judge. And it's just like in one fell swoop, you know, it's one of these sitcom things where you see the person on the phone, you're not hearing the other end of the conversation. So it's like, what? My career is over? What? I have no hope of ever making any income or reversing this horrible situation. You know, it's just his whole life is falling apart. And then meanwhile, Ashley is getting hit with tennis balls because her tennis ball auto pitcher thing is malfunctioning. And so she's like standing there fighting off tennis balls instead of just walking inside.
Yep. And what happens? Something happens to Carlton, right?
Whatever happens to Carlton, he reacts with the Macaulay Culkin slapping his face, looking into the camera, Home Alone thing.
Home Alone screen.
So let's pause for a second and just talk about the Halloween costumes. Will Smith is Dracula, no problem. Carlton is Macaulay Culkin, because what he says is, I admire Macaulay Culkin's business sense. You know, his last three movies have made, and then he says something like $400 million. There's some sort of box office gross that I remember going, oh, that's a sign of the times. That is like a tenth of what a blockbuster made now, at least before COVID. But anyway, his Macaulay Culkin outfit is dyeing his hair yellow and wearing overalls.
Yeah, he's got a red shirt and like blue overalls. And I honestly thought he was going for like a Bart Simpson.
Yeah, or Dennis the Menace. Yeah, he looks a lot like Wesley Snipes in Demolition Man. He looks nothing like Macaulay Culkin in Home Alone. But nonetheless, the image stayed with me, and it's also he can do that face slap thing,
right,
looking into the
camera.
That
was why they did it like that, for sure. But yeah, Wesley Snipes 100% is wearing overalls and a red shirt with this same hair dye in Demolition Man, and both straps on his overalls. That's hilarious. Yeah, that's exactly what he was doing. So they were calling it something else so they could do that joke, but that's really funny that that's the costume they went with. But then Jeffrey gets arrested for immigration issues.
Yes, that was often a thing on the show, his immigration issues. And we can't forget, of course, Hillary gets engaged to Jazz, right?
That's
DJ
right.
Jazzy Jeff has his recurring role as Jazz. And we get this reversal of all the Jazz iconography, because we get Hillary and Jazz doing the little hand slap thing that Will and Jazz used to always do. And then we get Uncle Phil being thrown out the front door the way that he used to always throw out Jazz.
Yep. that was fun. Like, some of those little nuggets that were there just for fans of the show. I mean, obviously it was for fans of the show in current time. Those were really fun, and I appreciated that.
Yeah. But so everything is going to hell, right? The everything is falling apart. And so everyone goes, Will, this is your fault. Like, the hex is real. We are cursed because you pissed off the psychic.
So you got to go fix this. So Will goes back to the psychic, and now we're in a completely different set. Like, yes. It was like a parallel universe has been entered, and the psychic isn't a psychic. He's just this dude that's living in his mom's house with cats all over the wall.
Yes, he's Ralph Scorpius now, because I guess as a psychic, his name was Scorpius. So when Will goes like, are you Scorpius? He's like, yes, I am Ralph Scorpius. But he's totally normcore. His house is a normal house now. They're going for that thing of like, but that hotel burned down 20 years ago, right? But instead of it burned down, it's like there was never a weird, freaky, deaky psychic place here. There's just a normal house. There is a very uncomfortable dynamic where when Will enters this guy's house, having been invited, right, he knocks on the door and the guy says, yes, come in. Will walks into the house and this guy freaks the fuck out,
yes,
seeing Will there.
Yes.
And there is a definite unsaid thing of like, why is there a young black man in my house?
And this is kind of how the episode ends. And it is a very uncomfortable scene where you've got this character, Ralph Scorpius or whatever, just like continually saying he's going to call the police and that this, you know, you need to get out of my house and stop trying to rob me. And then Will's sitting down on the couch crying.
So, yeah.
Because he's like, I'm not trying to rob you. I was like, this is hard. This is hard. Oh, God.
Well, that's funny because that saved it to me. I thought the energy of Scorpius totally freaking out at like, please don't rob me, was uncomfortable and shitty, but then Will Smith doing his sort of like hysterical crying character, that was like one of his little go-to comedy moves in those times, was he loved to do that, like, hey man, you know what you're doing, man. And that, I don't know, the goofiness of that kind of brought me back into it.
Okay, because it was a recognizable character for you. And
he's being silly.
Like, yeah, I kind of forgot that, because when I was seeing it, I was seeing like all of these black men on the sidewalks crying, saying, I just want my mom. I just want my mom. Get, you know, don't tase me, bro. Yeah. And like all of the stuff. Like, I just was like, it was hard. this was hard.
It's a weird scene, but yeah, Will is doing that thing. Like I said, he's doing his sort of funny, hysterical routine. And then in this case, it's all a dream. It ends with him, right, going like, just lift the curse, lift the curse, lift the curse. And then we sort of transition to like, okay, now he's waking up from his nightmare going, lift the curse, lift the curse. And it's a normal day. It's all over. It was just a dream. But then we get Groundhog's Day.
Right. It's like he just dreamed the thing that was about to happen, because he and Carlton go into the kitchen and they start having their morning breakfast. And then every beat is happening just like that first scene. And Will keeps trying to like interrupt and say different things, but nothing he says is changing the conversation. Like, you know, he like interrupts and asks Phil a question, and Uncle Phil pretends like he didn't even say anything and just keeps plodding along with the same lines that they had said in the first scene. And so we end then, that's right, with Will's face like in a window pane screaming because he knows what's about to happen.
Yeah. So it's interesting how comparing this and Laverne and Shirley, this one is the less fantastical one because we don't at least have objects literally floating through air. But with this one, they felt the need to add the thing of, well, it was only a dream, you know, so that you could at least buy into it a little bit.
But not even only a dream. It was like deja vu. It was all about to happen. And so it was like something super creepy.
That's true. But you could still, that adds a little bit of plausible deniability to it.
Sure. It puts the scare more at the end. And to be perfectly frank, it's a real scare. Like what's about to happen to Will is terrifying. So I think they did a good job in terms of like, yeah, they had all the silly tropes and all the what, oh, and it's only a dream, but it isn't. Like this is about to repeat itself and he knows what's coming. Yeah. And can he change it? We don't know. And he's just screaming in the window. To me, it didn't lean tropey because, oh, it's only a dream. It lent itself more to, oh my God, now he's got to walk through this whole day knowing exactly what's going to happen. Can he change it? Can he do something different?
But it's also a little bit of a different trope. Because again, this is early 90s, Groundhog Day, you know, 1990, 91 maybe. So that whole thing of like, oh, hearing the same dialogue verbatim over and over again, like that was a little bit of a trope too, or just a little bit of a sort of Twilight Zone-y thing of like, uh-oh, we know where this is going. Okay, moving on to Reba. So that was from the Halloween episode. Now we're going to move on to our early 90s hip-hop guest stars podcast a minute. But first, let's finish the quiz.
Who was it that was on that episode?
Belle Biv DeVoe. All right, give me the
quiz. Did not make the boy band list in our last question, but new question. What are the names of Vivian's sisters?
Ooh, that's a good one. One of them, obviously, is Will's mom. And she is played by that lady who's shown up in like 7 or 8 sitcoms that we've watched since
Isn't she from 227?
The Jeffersons, yeah. 227. Yeah, I can picture her face. But, oh boy, I don't think I know her name.
Well, do you want the choices?
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Vi, Janet, and Roberta.
Vi is definitely one of them.
And then Harriet, Vi, and Janice. Uh-huh. Helen, Janice, and Vi. Or Helena, Janet, and Vi.
So Vi's in all of them. Were going to remember Vi.
And then you have a Janet and Janice. All right. Either
Let's get rid of the one that has a Harriet. They're trying to confuse you with family matters.
Okay, so no Harriet. And then you have a Helen and a Helena and a Roberta left.
I like Roberta. Okay. I feel like there was a Roberta in there, so I'm going to say that one.
All right. Vi, Janet, and Roberta. Oh, it's Helen, Janice, and Vi.
All right. Fair enough.
Which famous actor cameos in season 1 as Ice Trey?
Oh, that's... it's not Terrence Howard. It's the other actor who plays that character in Iron Man. It's Don Cheadle.
Don Cheadle. And he gets it without the choices. Other choices were Jamie Foxx and Idris Elba. In the extended theme song, what does Will drink out of a champagne glass?
Juice from a champagne glass? This might be all right.
What kind of juice?
Orange juice.
It is orange juice. The other choices are Diet Coke, Gatorade, and milk. Ugh. Nice job.
And I
First
love
class,
milk.
Yo, this is bad. Drinking orange juice out of a champagne glass. That's a little meme that comes up. I don't remember that extended version. I think this might be the last one, or you have two more. When Will works as a waiter, what is his uniform?
Does he dress as like a giant chicken?
So your options are a pirate, a vampire, a cowboy, and a Greek
god. No, it's definitely pirate. I remember now.
Pirate. Yeah. Nice work. And your last question.
All right.
What is Hillary wearing when her boyfriend Trevor dies unexpectedly?
Well, I can tell you he fell out of the plane or he died
skydiving. Brian Stokes Mitchell?
What was she wearing? All right, give me the choices.
A French maid's outfit, a wedding dress, scuba diving gear, a bathing suit.
Yeah, I think it's the French maid thing.
She is wearing a wedding dress.
All right, so I feel like I got about like 80% or so, 75%.
Calculating your results, you are 75% correct. You beat 50% of users. You had 9 out of 12.
All right, I mean... not bad, but I'm a little underwhelmed
by my
own.
I'm disappointed. I figured you would go 12 for 12 or at least 11 for 12.
At least I'm impressed that the quiz was not uniformly easy. I'm happy that some of them were
a little tougher. Yeah.
All right. So let's finish it out with this segment from our early 90s hip hop guest stars episode. This was relatively recently. This is the Fresh Prince episode where Belle Biv DeVoe shows up.
In 2 episode 11, The Butler Did It.
Yeah, so our guest stars on this one are going to be Belle Biv DeVoe. We just did Bobby Brown, so I think we need to do the public service here of breaking down New Edition and the East Coast family and the whole complex system here, right? You had New Edition in the 80s.
Early 80s, right?
So mm-hmm. I wasn't really familiar with them. I sort of learned about them retroactively. That was Ronnie, Bobby, Ricky, Mike, Ralph, and Johnny, right?
That's a lot of kids.
It's Ronnie DeVoe, Bobby Brown, Ricky Bell, Mike Bivens, Ralph Tresvant, Johnny Gill.
Look at you. You just did, ladies and gentlemen and NBs, he did that without notes.
Yeah, it's because of the song where they will reference it all the time. They go, Ronnie, Bobby, Ricky, Mike, Ralph, Johnny, too.
So, but you know their last names as well.
Because, so Bobby Brown went on to a, you know, successful career on his own. We all know him. Johnny Gill also had a successful solo career, but not quite as much.
Right.
But he was a thing. Ralph Tresvant, same thing, but a little lower down on the fame factor. And then you got the other guys, Ronnie, Bobby, and Ricky.
They were Bell Biv DeVoe.
And then Bell Biv DeVoe formed the East Coast Family, which was the three of them as Bell Biv DeVoe, ABC, Another Bad Creation, which was like seven kids, like little, children.
Yes. It was a new version of New Edition a little bit later on that had a bunch of young kids.
Yes, yeah. Bobby Brown was not like five when he was in New Edition.
And these kids were like really young. It was like Menudo. Like, yes. Right? You had kids that were like from 5 until 13 or something.
And they would go on to have a feud with Criss Cross, so we'll get to them. But so, and Boys to Men was the final ingredient in the East Coast Family. So a lot going on here. But BBD, as we called them, Bell Biv DeVoe, looking back on it now, they're essentially a one-hit wonder. Their big song was Poison.
Not to be confused with your BVDs.
Right. Yes, which I did not. For years, I thought people were talking about Bell Biv DeVoe when they would mention their BVDs. But yeah, they had other songs like Do Me, which I used to put on in the car with my parents driving.
But wait a minute. That song is directly referenced in this show.
Oh, yeah. Don't think that was lost on me.
Because, and I didn't know that until just this very moment, Uncle Phil and Aunt Vivian go away in this episode for a weekend and they stay in the Do Me Inn.
Yes. Do Me was the follow-up single to Poison, which was the big hit single that everyone still remembers from Bell Biv DeVoe. So, yeah, look, all that's to say that I was definitely into the Bell Biv DeVoe movement. I remember all of this. I would put on that album that had all those super sexual songs on car trips with my parents, you know, when I was like 11, and just be like, yeah, this is what music is like. I don't know. So, of course, I was excited when they showed up on this Fresh Prince episode.
Heck yeah.
So, yeah, we're going to have basically a retread of the party when the parents are away type plot.
But this time it's not Will.
No, this time Carlton has, he has assumed the role of acting adult in charge because Carlton has this master plan where he says, you know, it's not about throwing a party per se.
It's all profit.
Yeah, we're going to rent out our house for a music video shoot, which I guess is a thing you could do, especially if you live in California. And he says, we're going to make $5,000. It'll be pure profit and we'll clean everything up by the time our parents get home on Monday. So it is a rare reversal for Carlton to be the one with the crazy plan.
Right. Will is actually following the rules. He's having like a friend sleepover. And that's the extent of his, you know, having people over when the parents aren't home. But yeah, so the video is happening and he comes downstairs in the morning in his PJs and the whole place is like enveloped in a smoke machine fog.
Yeah, it's a whole different place.
And they have curtains up everywhere. These like, you know, sort of sheer kind of flowy curtains everywhere. And they have this big couch that's in the center that's replaced the normal couch that's like one of those Ottoman style couches, right? It's like a poof, you know. Yeah. And it's bright red and it spirals up to the top, but it has a very little place to sit. It's just more of an art piece than it is really something to sit on.
Yeah, and I feel like until this point we haven't revealed who the musician's going to be, right?
It's been a surprise. Right.
Yeah, Carlton just says, you know, I'm renting out the house for a video. So, yeah, the scene starts, you know, they start the playback, they start having music, and the three of them, Ronnie, Ricky, and Mike, come strutting into the living room and start, you know, rapping along with their song, and Will and his friend Todd start freaking out and jumping into the shot. But I just want to stop for a second and talk about this song, because I feel like this is the same thing that happened with the Bobby Brown ones. When you have these acts that are like a little bit of a flash in the pan, right? Their album is already out.
Right.
By the time that they're booking these guest appearances on these sitcoms and stuff. So the Bobby Brown song, I don't know what song that was. That wasn't familiar to me. But this song that Belle Biv DeVoe starts singing, Gangsta, I do remember this song. And this is not on their original album, Poison. This was like a follow-up.
Right.
And the truth is they were already slipping at this time, you know, even though it's so soon after they hit the scene. And so this song, I liked it. Like, it's already, it's kind of gimmicky. It has these like machine gun sounds and stuff. But I remember taking to this song and getting the single and everything, but this did not end up being like a hit on the radio or anything. And it was sort of like the last we heard from Belle Biv DeVoe.
Yeah. Well, so Will and his friend come downstairs and they're trying to get into the video, and then, and they're in their PJs, which is kind of adorable.
Yeah.
And they get kind of pushed off to the side, and the director, who's a working actor you'd recognize, he's in a bunch of stuff. He's like, hey guys, you know, come on, we're burning daylight here. Let's go. Let's go. Carlton's like, yeah, man, you know, have some chill, get out of the video. And then Hillary comes down, and the guys, like the Belle Biv DeVoe guys, they stop and they're like, oh, Hillary, good to see you. So that messes up another take.
Yeah, it's the joke of like any celebrity in town probably knows Hillary.
Right. Well, and she's like, sorry, guys, I can't stay and be in the video. Like, you asked me, I have a shoe sale. And they're like, you got to do what you got to do. And she's like, I know, I should really take a vacation. And so then she leaves, and then they start again. And then the Girl Scout troop comes in.
Oh, yeah. We haven't talked about that.
So Ashley and her little Girl Scout troop, they've been trying to sell cookies throughout this whole episode. They come in from wherever they were, and they see what's going on, and they run and scream and hug the guys because they're like, oh my gosh, it's these famous musicians that we like. And then they get pulled off. So that's another take ruined. And then we really got to get this done. We really got to get this done. And then Will and his friends start dancing and trying to get in the middle of the video again, like randomly instead of.
Yeah, it's very funny. We hear the first, you know, 30 seconds of this song, Gangster, like 17 times.
Yes.
You know, they keep playing it over and over again. And I'm going to make the same observation I did about the Bobby Brown thing. This is a bizarre concept for a video. And again, I think you just have to buy into like, oh, they just made these videos. They would shoot them performing the song in different places and cut it together. But
that's what this one really looks like. That the Bobby Brown one, I just kind of am like, whatever. It's not real. Like, this actually looks like it would be.
But
you
here's
know,
the thing.
They are like coming through a curtain and they're doing like the beginning of this song, and then they're just kind of like playing up
and
to the camera,
these
and that's
three
it.
Three women.
Oh, yeah, that's
that
the dancers.
Walk in after them, but it just looks so weird. You have them come into this curtain and start singing the song to the camera, and then behind them, these three women file into the room and just lift their hands in the air and start doing that sort of generic dancing kind of thing. But yeah, it's just like, this is like, what is this? You know, like, what am I looking at? Just like three guys rapping with these three ladies just kind of randomly moving around behind them in a living room?
But like, that's not what it looks like. It's all covered in, you know, it looks like probably a whorehouse more than anything else, because it's got these weird lights and like everything's red and it's like smoky, and they're shooting them from really low, like the, you know, the camera guy is down on his knees like shooting up, and so they're just, I think it's just a shot, you know, they're just getting a few shots of them in this like, you know, fancy house that is all kind of smoky and curtainy and stuff.
It would be less weird to me with out the ladies. I think if it were just the three guys rapping, I would say, oh, okay, it's an interesting looking locale and they're performing the song.
See, and it would be weird to me if there weren't ladies,
because they're not.
It's like a video. You always have hot girls.
But they're
in the
not
background.
Doing a choreographed dance, nor are they just
That's
hanging
more
out.
That's more of a now thing. They are just hanging out. They're walking in and like, oh yeah, it's a party. I'm just kind of getting down to the
I
music.
I guess that's what it's supposed to be, just like a party vibe.
But no,
once
they're
again,
not doing like a Megan Thee Stallion, like,
Yes, this is not going to show up on, you know, David Fincher or Michelle Gondry's music video reel.
Well, of course not. So anyway, so now the video has been interrupted multiple times, and we find out that all the furniture that's normally in the living room is in the backyard, even though it could have just gone somewhere else in the house. They moved it all into the backyard, and then as soon as they said that, I was like, oh, it's going to rain. Yeah. And right on cue, thunder, lightning. Oh my gosh, what are we going to do? Everybody, they're done with the video shoot. They all start rushing to get the furniture back in.
Well, and that was a super sitcom-y contrivance when the director is like, all right, we just have one more shot and then we'll be out of your hair. And it's like, wait a minute. You just did like 17 takes and didn't even get that one thing that you were trying to get. Now you only have one more shot to do in this location. Like, it just seems strange to me that their whole itinerary was like, let's get one shot of Belle Biv DeVoe singing in front of this doorway.
You're thinking too much about it.
And one more shot. and then we're done.
Well, but also, you know, we come in the middle of it because they had been, you know, Carlton has been awake for hours, already has his clipboard and is all, like, going around.
I think that's what I didn't get, because that part that you're saying where Will and Todd, his friend, come downstairs and everything's already underway, I was incredulous about that too. Like, did this film crew sneak in the middle of the night and set all this up? But I think you're right. I think we understand they slept late, and so this has been going all day.
Right.
So yeah, the thing, again, much like what often happens in a party while the parents are away type episode, they get the phone call. Will answers the phone. Party, what does he say?
Oh, that's
party,
right.
Machine.
Party,
right.
Yeah. Party palace or something like that. And yeah. Aunt Viv's like, what's that music? What's going on?
Yeah, it's Uncle Phil and Aunt Viv calling from their hotel. They've been having this whole crazy B-plot, like you said, with their getaway. And they're calling to say, we're coming home early. We'll be there tonight instead of tomorrow.
And that was very nice of them to warn them.
Yeah.
So Will passes on this information to Carlton. They start freaking out. That's when the thunder and lightning happens. Then they realize, oh my God, all the furniture is ruined. So they were going to make $5,000 from doing this. And the guy is, you know, the director has given them the money. So they were like, Hillary, go cash that check. Use half of the money to go buy a new couch because the couch is ruined. We'll figure out what to do with the rug and the floors and everything else.
And they assign Ashley to paint the walls.
That's right.
So yeah, that's Ashley's job. Carlton is in charge of buffing, right? This is something I remember from watching this when I was a kid, where they have the buff-o-matic and Carlton is going like, let's read the manual and, you know, and see the proper steps here. And so it starts, okay, page one, welcome to the wonderful world of buffing. And Will is like, nah, we don't need to read all this. Look, let's just plug it in and see what happens. And it goes and drives itself out into the swimming pool. But yeah, everybody's got their own job to do. And it's your classic Ferris Bueller type thing. We need to get the house back in shape before the parents come home.
Right. And it turns out that that couch is actually a $5,000 couch when you include the delivery fee, which the, you know, they have to pay because they don't have a vehicle that can deliver this giant couch. So she first comes home, Hillary first comes home with a love seat that's like half the size of the normal couch.
Will Smith, Will goes, I think Uncle Phil will notice when he gets up and his butt's stuck in the middle of
it. Yeah, when the couch is still stuck to his butt because it was a much smaller version of the couch.
Yeah, Ashley is still painting like minutes before they get home. And this is something, just as somebody who has tried to clean up my apartment and paint over dirty windowsills and stuff on the same day that I've got company coming over, I can tell you,
don't touch the window.
Yeah, you've got to leave a few hours for the smell of wet paint to dissipate.
I'm going to need to hear the story of you painting before you had company coming over.
No, it just, sometimes, you know, like white painted windowsills, they get so crappy that you just go like, it's easier to just slather a quick coat of white paint on this than to try to like clean it in any other way.
I have never experienced this. You are a dirty, dirty man.
And so, yeah, I'm watching her do that going like, all right, not only is the paint going to be wet, but the house is going to reek of paint
right
for hours. And the show addresses one of those concerns because Phil and Vivian come home, and it's one of those like, okay, looks like you kids did a good job. The house is in order. And of course, I immediately notice that Uncle Phil is leaning against
the wet paint wall. Same, yeah.
Right. So, all right, they're not accounting for the fact that it's going to smell like wet paint, but dollars to donuts, we're going to get a paint on the back of the coat gag, and that's exactly what happens. That's the last little button when Phil and Vivian go up to bed, and we see that he's still got the paint on his back.
And but, the kids all go, you get this and I'll get that, and they all run, like, yeah, they scatter because yeah, they know they're going to get caught as soon as he takes off his coat when he goes upstairs.
Exactly. So look, scenario is very much standard sitcom stuff. Let's do something we're not really supposed to do while the parents are away, and all the fun stuff that we didn't really talk about that happens in the hotel with Vivian and Phil. But yeah, in terms of tracking the trope, same stuff, right? It's like we don't have as much of the anticipation because it's not revealed that Belle Biv DeVoe is going to be the musician. So we don't have all of that, like, oh, I have all of their albums and that kind of stuff.
Right.
But it's still that thing of we're shooting a video. And
they get that moment of fame, right, where the screaming girls and then the guys, too, yes, are like, whoa, they're famous. So you get both of those, like, oh, celebrity moments.
Yes. And I think in both cases, there's a little bit of that naivete that you have to just sort of roll with of like, yeah, major recording artists shoot music videos in a random classroom in a real school or somebody's living room or something like that. Like, I guess stranger things have happened.
I think they do that.
yeah. Like I said, in both cases, the music videos just seem strange to me. All right. Moving on to Drexel's class. Okay, so that was from the early 90s hip-hop podcast. So that was it. The three times that we've covered The Fresh Prince, they're pretty evenly spaced from our very first episode to recently.
It's interesting because I feel like we talk about them so much more because I think Fresh Prince, Trials and Charge, Saved by the Bell tend to be the ones that when we're doing other episodes, we're like, oh yeah, Saved by the Bell had an episode like that, or Fresh Prince had an episode
like
that.
I'm certainly like that. Those are my go-tos, yes, for sure. I was just a sponge when this was on, you know, I just soaked all this up. And like you said, it's super tropey, you know, it's, they are not reinventing the wheel with The Fresh Prince.
But they were so fun to watch.
Yeah. Any favorites of these three?
Oh, it was absolutely the Halloween seances. 100%. Cause I still think about that episode, the Hex and the Single Guy.
Yeah. Yeah. That was pretty good. I mean, I like them all for some reason. That Belle Biv DeVoe one, maybe because it was a sleepover and it had it has like Will and Ice or whatever his friend's name is coming down in the pajamas. That one just stuck with me. Or it might be because of that Belle Biv DeVoe gangsta song that I always liked.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
it didn't get much airplay. So that Fresh Prince episode was kind of like the most publicity it had. But yeah. All right. So much for our Fresh Prince mixtape. And we'll be back in a few weeks with new episodes. And until then, we will declare this segment of the sitcom study concluded. Thank you for listening to the sitcom study. Tell us what you think or share your own TV tropes and topic ideas by sending a self-addressed stamped email to sitcomstudypodcast@gmail.com or find us on Facebook or Instagram. And if you like the show, consider leaving a rating or review on your podcast app. It helps us boost those precious Nielsen ratings. The sitcom study is recorded in front of a live studio dog.